My son actually really asks me every day when we pick him up from school if he can go see Halloween.
And go see Halloween?
He wants to drive by houses that are decorated for Halloween.
Oh, cute.
Although one of the houses in my neighborhood has a beheading.
Yikes. It's all intense.
Yeah, there's a guy with the machete in a tree and his head above the machete, like perched on it, and a body laying on the ground.
Yikes.
Okay.
It's pretty, it's a dummy.
Oh, well, sure, it's not real. Yeah. Have you checked?
We assume.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, we really stepped up Halloween this year.
Yikes.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, okay.
It's a long call from the inflatable Bluey as a pirate next door. All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor Joe Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Yes, happy October, everybody.
Woo!
Spooky season.
Spooky season.
I love the spooky season, so.
Yeah.
I would like it more if I weren't still sweating every time I walk outside.
That's the only downside.
That is a significant downside.
It's not the downside to spooky season, it's the downside of Texas.
Yeah.
I associate them together.
Halloween other places, lovely.
Yeah, sure. Fine, yeah. The good old days when I used to have to associate what can I wear underneath my Halloween costume for warmth as opposed to what can I take off under my Halloween costume for
everybody.
How little costume can I wear?
A jacket on top of their costume, right? So how do you incorporate a jacket? Maybe you have to wear some, you know.
Yeah, I always went with the just have a costume that was big enough to wear the jacket underneath so that your costume is still.
Okay, so you just look like weirdly bulky?
No, I mean, you just wear the appropriate jacket. It wasn't like freezing cold every year. It was just like you needed a light jacket, a light long sleeve jacket.
Sure. I stand by, you got to just come up with a costume that can incorporate a jacket.
But you can't do a jacket costume every year.
Sure you
can. Well, all right.
You might be able to, yeah.
Indiana Jones.
Every year.
That's one.
Han Solo.
Congratulations.
Han Solo.
All Harrison Ford.
Well, Newhouse, he has a vest in the OG. So.
Oh, okay.
On Hoth the Ice Planet.
Hoth Han Solo. There you go. What other?
You also get a Tauntaun.
Jack Ryan. He wears
for
a suit. I'm just naming Han Solo. Harrison Ford
characters.
Him on Air Force One.
Also in a suit. So.
It's perfect.
Two for one.
Yeah, you buy one suit, wear it back to back.
Did you wear that last year? No, now I'm the president. It's fine.
They're both Jack Ryan, by the way. So, just so we're clear. Because I know our angry listeners would be like, actually, Air Force One is also Jack Ryan.
But not as the president.
Yeah, it is. It's the same character.
Really?
I think so.
He gets elected president?
I'm pretty confident.
I don't think that's right.
If it's not, I'm going to look it up after this and I will edit it out if I'm wrong.
That's like the only time Patrick edits.
All right, it was spooky season. So I got a spooky news story.
Do we need some sound effects here for spooky news
story?
Yeah,
you bet. Woo! This is about our...
On cue.
I know, that's great.
This is about Hershey's. Reese's Candies.
Are there razor blades in our candies?
No, of course. No, it's Reese's. It's
Reese's Pieces.
Reese's Pieces. Thank you.
That's insane.
We have this argument every year.
It's not even an argument.
It's the only time Elise is on my side, so I'm okay with it.
It's Pieces, quite clearly.
There's a vein in your forehead I've never seen before.
Get him going on Advent. It comes out for that, too.
Right. Yep.
What do you call the candy with like peanut butter and chocolate? And
Reese's Cup.
It's a Reese's.
No, it's Reese's. Reese's.
Reese's.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It just rolls off the tongue.
It does.
Reese's Pieces.
So crazy town.
What do they got going on in their peanut butter cups?
They've been sued.
Ooh.
Yes.
For finding razor blades in their peanut butter cups.
Their Halloween candies aren't spooky enough.
What? We can sue over this?
That's not a thing you can do. Please.
I need to have some words with Jolly Rancher.
Somebody throw this out of the
court. Because they're not jolly enough?
They're not jolly enough. They suck.
This is why nothing gets done in this country.
I am not
this
jolly.
Right here.
All right, so here's the problem.
Okay.
The Reese's peanut butter pumpkin on its
I'm
wrapper
familiar with the peanut butter pumpkin.
Has a pumpkin face.
Oh,
a jack-o'-lantern
has a face.
It has a jack-o'-lantern.
And inside
but
of
the candy...
Not.
No face. It is just a pumpkin, not a jack-o'-lantern.
Well, I mean,
as opposed to the Christmas tree that is on the outside depicted as a solid Christmas tree and
correct.
On the inside is a solid Christmas tree.
That is correct.
It is now false advertising.
So then you open it up and you're like, I expected something to look like a jack-o'-lantern.
And I got
a pumpkin.
A pumpkin.
Yeah.
I mean,
this still should not
so
be in the court of law, but
it's lame. But like, are you personally victimized by this faceless pumpkin?
This person, and I'm betting it's a dude, apparently was.
Class action.
Class action lawsuit.
Multiple dudes. Okay.
So is that the one where we can all get a piece of that pie if we too we can jump all get a piece of that peanut butter cup?
You know what? Yes. I did get an email that saying there was a class action lawsuit against Facebook, and I signed up for it, and they sent me a $38 gift card.
Oh, I did one for Wells Fargo. I got like $15.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So I'm pro. Let's get on this.
Now you can't sue them for real things.
That's fine. What was I going to sue them for?
Yeah. You know? I'll take my $15.
Yeah. I'm for sale.
Yeah.
For $38. That's real money. I bought two magic tricks with it.
That sounds right.
I could only, it was only an online gift card. So.
Oh, okay.
Those are lame.
Yeah, but still. I'm good enough for two magic tricks.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, and magic tricks are not lame.
Absolutely not.
No.
Yeah. All right. It has been thrown out. Don't worry. The lawsuit said that you could not demonstrate that they had, you know, a decrease in their enjoyment of the candy because it did not have a face.
Yeah, you have to prove harm, right?
Yeah. Harm could not be proven.
Yeah. Tough.
That's almost hard to believe that we had to throw that out. Yeah.
So what? for Reese's, it's a happy Halloween. So
yeah.
For everybody else.
For Reese's.
Yeah. Happy Halloween, Reese's.
Reese's.
That's, y'all are insane. I'm suing y'all for damages.
For the increase in you blood pressure.
You can't prove it.
I got this podcast to prove it. Yeah. The plaintiff, the head of the plaintiff said, we believe companies should not be awarded with sales when they falsely represent the main characteristic of the product and only have to pay damages if it's been shown that the consumers paid a premium.
Ugh. Paid a premium.
Yeah. Hershey did not respond for a comment.
It's almost hard to believe.
Yeah.
I don't know that I knew that Hershey made Reese's.
Reese's. They don't make Reese's. They make Reese's.
I don't know that I knew that Hershey owned that product.
Are you sure it's not Hershey?
Hershey.
Maybe it is. I don't know.
Has anybody asked?
Yeah. Maybe we've all been saying it wrong for all those years.
You've been saying it wrong. That's for sure. All right. There you go.
That's not true.
How do you feel? Do you want to sue any other Halloween candies?
Many, but not for that.
I'll tell you who I want to sue. Last year, we put out a bowl of candy like you do.
Because we got trick or treating. Who stole your candy?
No. That happens. Yeah. I get that happens. They stole my bowl.
That happened to us 2 years ago.
They took our bowl.
Yeah. Totally happened to us 2 years ago.
What are y'all doing?
What?
We had a little like plastic cauldron filled with candy, and it was gone when we came back from trick-or-treating.
Yeah. Ours is just like a plastic mixing bowl. It wasn't even Halloween themed. It was a red plastic bowl.
What I hope is that this is actually raccoons that are just dragging the bowl off into the woods.
I assume it's some snot-nosed eighth grader with his friends looking like, look at me, guys, and takes the whole bowl and throws it in his bag, and they all have a good little laugh.
And now I don't have a bowl.
And now I'm missing.
Then how does he explain that bowl to his parents?
He doesn't.
He just threw it in the woods.
Yeah,
he threw it behind
trash,
somebody's
whatever.
Bush. He doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eighth graders are idiots. They're not thinking through that.
Yeah.
You should set up a camera on your bowl this year. So
I have a
camera,
and my wife made me turn it off because it was pinging too many times.
During Halloween?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, next year.
Can't you just turn off the ping?
I don't know. Maybe. Probably. Yeah.
Silent record.
I may not put out candies. I don't know.
Ooh.
Well, I mean,
you ruined it for everyone.
It all gets stolen anyway. Like, it is kind of a lame thing because I want kids to have candy, but we go trick or treating with our kids, and then we come back and we put them to bed. And I don't want people knocking on my door because my kids are sleeping.
Yeah,
because I have little kids.
You can sit out on your porch.
I'm putting my little kids to bed
after you put them to bed.
Okay, sure.
The night just doesn't end as you.
It's a fair solution. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, just letting you know. That's who I'm suing.
That kid.
Any other candies you want to sue?
It's going to be hard to sue snot-nosed eighth grader. That's going to be a tough one to prove in court.
That's
just
a lot
you know.
Of eighth graders.
That's a reverse class action.
Yes. Well, I'm saying every eighth grader, every eighth grader in my area gives me like 10 cents, it's going to add up to a lot of magic money. That's all I'm saying.
at least $10.
No, that's only 100 eighth graders.
Like in your immediate area?
You assume the middle school has, you know, 1,000 eighth graders.
Well, how proud of a span are you covering? Like, are you covering
I'm
your entire school
I'm
district?
I'm covering a 5-mile radius from my house. Okay.
My board. Okay. All right.
I don't know who drives in to steal my candy bowl.
All right.
It might be friends of somebody that lives in your neighborhood.
Exactly.
They might have been visiting.
Exactly.
They may have been in your house.
My wife stole the bowl.
She just didn't.
You'll find the bowl under the bed.
She just didn't like the bowl, so she's like, this is the chance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Use that bowl. Use that bowl.
I hate that bowl.
All right, let's get to our main topic from Christianity Today.
All right.
By David Roach.
Ugh. Oh, no. I can't deal with this.
Not a fan of that name?
Roaches are like perhaps my one true phobia.
Oh.
So I should not be giving you in the internet this information. Internet people are mean.
I mean, yeah, I
like that she doesn't assume that we're mean.
Hatred, you're also mean, but that's
established fact. Hatred of
facts.
Roaches is kind of baseline humanity. We all hate roaches.
Yeah,
right?
But this seems to be more than just hatred. Like, I don't like roaches.
Like, I'm actually sweating right now. Thinking
yeah,
about
I'm not
roaches.
Sweating thinking about a roach. I'm not doing that.
I can't do it.
If you had a bunch of roaches dumped on you and you walked in, like, a, you know, an elaborate prank. Roaches in a bucket.
This is hypothetically.
Hypothetically.
Yeah. Were they live roaches or just fake
obviously
roaches?
Obviously live roaches.
I would not be happy with that.
Yeah. The obvious answer is to die.
I don't know about die, but I would not be happy. That would be very gross. I would not like that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, roaches are awful. We're all.
The worst. Yes.
Officially, the Beyond Sunday podcast is saying roaches are bad.
We're anti.
Anti-roaches. Yeah. David Roach.
God created all things good.
May or may not be. Roaches got may or may not be included in that. I don't know. We'll see.
We don't know. Yeah.
Is he actually a roach that has become sentient and learned how to type?
I don't like that.
Balls in your like court, David.
I have a real hard time with Men in Black as well.
because of Tommy Lee Jones? Is that
because of the roach alien.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Sure. Church discipline.
Ooh.
Otherwise known as a great excuse to get up in other people's business.
Is still the exception.
Still the exception.
But it's making a comeback.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Still the exception to what?
To the rule.
What's the rule?
I think
to ignore it. To not do it.
To not do church discipline.
Ah.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about this.
Okay.
Church discipline.
Yeah. We should probably clarify what we mean by that.
Yes, we should.
I went to a private school and I was paddled. So maybe
that is an example of church discipline. Yeah.
It's a wild story.
I know. I mean, it was not uncommon. I don't know why that's so.
He's
like,
not that old, though.
I understand.
It's 90s.
Private schools could do a lot of stuff for a long time.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I know.
I was homeschooled and my principal didn't paddle me.
Yeah. Yep.
That is not true for all homeschool kids.
It's true, yeah.
What a world. Yep. Yeah. So church discipline, define it for us.
Yeah, so I think in the broadest sense, what this article is referencing as church discipline is when the church takes action against a member of that church for behavior that falls outside of the scope of what we would define as appropriately Christian.
Okay.
Ugh.
That is what this article is referencing. Now, yeah. I think there's another side of church discipline where the church disciplines itself, i.e., appropriate behavior within clergy and practices of that sort, which is a whole nother bailiwick of how we handle that and or have mishandled that. But this one is specifically talking about how do we discipline members when their behavior falls outside of the scope of our shared agreement of what an appropriate behavior should be.
Sure.
Yes.
We do have a biblical example of church discipline.
We got a biblical example of all kinds of things. Just to throw that out there.
We have a biblical example of a bald guy getting mad at a group of youth and ordering a bear to kill them. That's mm-hmm. that's there. Yeah. That's the thing. So.
Just like biblical example of
I
a
believe
statement
he curses them
bar.
And the bear just comes out. You know,
the bear does the thing.
The bear is not. The bear is not on his command.
He said, I'm a wind fat bear.
I mean, he does order the bear out.
He
says,
I think he just says curses upon them. And the she-bear shows up.
I think it's implied. Anyway.
Well, anyway.
As the case may be.
In 1 Corinthians, we've got an issue in the church. That's very specific. Like Paul, like, there's a lot of issues in the church. But we have one specific
very
issue.
Very specific one, yes.
Where there's a man in the church who has started a romantic relationship with his mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law, yep.
Okay,
and mother-in-law. I thought it was stepmother.
Doesn't matter.
Not
They're
biological
not
mother.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a non-biological mother.
I think maybe
mother,
stepmother.
That is inappropriate.
Yeah. And Paul outlines discipline for that person.
He does.
So,
there's that.
So.
And Jesus does talk about what to do when a member of your community sins against you and talks about, you know, forgive them or go to them first and then bring somebody else with you so you have witnesses and then bring them before the... Yeah,
I feel that's more like peer-to-peer. This is clearly like, this is church discipline.
Yeah, but so, I mean, from the church discipline perspective, Jesus's pattern is what's written into our constitution of how we would handle church discipline within our context at Lord of Life.
All right.
So I just think it falls into the similar pattern.
Okay, so we've got an example here from Mount Vernon Baptist Church in Sandy Springs, Georgia.
Okay.
I already know which direction this is going to go.
Yeah, you're not going to like it. Yeah.
All right. When a church member left her husband and moved in with another man, Pastor Aaron Minkioff thought about the couple's two young children. And he said, I wanted to be able to one day to tell those kids we did everything we could to save their parents' marriage. So they, leaders, asked the woman to live out her Christian profession by returning to her husband. And eventually they excluded her from church membership when she failed to repent.
Mm-hmm.
This was 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And since that, in this article, the church has had to discipline. The same church. Between 1 and 3 members each year with the congregation support.
Whoa. Amazed they have any members left.
Well, I mean, 1 to 3 members over 15 years.
I mean, that's let's take 3 top a 45. Year. Yeah, that's that can be a lot for a small church.
I'm guessing they're not that small. Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Sandy Springs, Georgia.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Okie dokie.
Yeah. So, like, this is what okay.
I am actually very interested to hear your take on this because I know what my take on this is, but I'm not clergy. So,
yeah. I will say it's complicated, but my personal take, and this is speaking for myself and not speaking for Lord of Life or even necessarily speaking for the ELCA. So,
love
just
this disclaimer.
So that everybody's aware of that. Like, all right, let's take this person's example, right? I can understand this pastor's desire to want to be able to do everything possible to save what might have otherwise been a healthy marriage, right? I don't know the context here. So sure. Let's put it in the best possible context that it was a healthy marriage and this woman, for whatever reason, was choosing to just walk away and was going to live with this other person outside of the covenant of the marriage that she had previously established. If that's the case, I can understand the desire to, like, we should try to fix this. Like, this was, by all accounts, a healthy marriage. We should try to fix this. I can understand that. I also think that it's unlikely that that was the only information that was available to that scenario. And I'm not sure that it is the church's role to discipline one person over the other simply because they were the one who happened to walk away. Mm-hmm. Right. In all likelihood, a marriage that happens like that, it's going to involve both parties. You know, there's responsibility in both places. And so to single out either individual and say, well, you're the one who's guilty because you walked away, I think is probably too reductionist in this scenario. So broadly, does the church have parameters to discipline people for inappropriate behavior? Yes. I mean, if somebody comes in and is doing inappropriate things that are hurting our other membership and things like that, we should be aware of that. Even if it's in your personal life, right? We should be aware of that. If someone is convicted of a sexual crime outside of Lord of Life, we need to be aware of that to protect our members, right? If someone is a known alcoholic, we're not going to let that person drive our youth somewhere, right? Like, there are things that we're going to do to ensure that our people and our responsibilities are safe. At the same time, I'm not going to say to that alcoholic, well, you had another drink, so now you're no longer allowed to be a member here at Lord of Life, right? There might be parameters on what you are and not allowed to do, but I'm not just going to say, well, you're out. You're excommunicated, mm-hmm. right? I'm not going to say to a couple, oh, you got divorced. You're the one who left. You're out. Like, that to me is crossing a line that is past the parameters of what the church is called to take into account and be responsible for.
Okay, Elise.
Yeah. I mean, largely, I think I'm in agreement with you, but, you know, I'm not. Should I give the disclaimer that this is not speaking for Lord
no,
of Life?
No one assumes that you.
Wow.
We got it.
Wow, guys.
You typically don't speak on behalf of Lord of Life. That is not your role.
Yeah. Myself, yeah, yes.
That is your role. That's
it is, yeah. Just as a layperson, you know, this is the I guess, unfiltered. But, yeah, like, I think for me, like, saying, oh, I would like to reach out to somebody in my congregation and help them and support them in a struggle, right?
Sure.
You know, mm-hmm. But we'll take this person's marriage problems, for example. Cutting them off from community when they do not behave or make the choices that you want them to is not helping or supporting them.
Yeah.
Like, that just is not, that's a ridiculous stance, yep. right? Mm-hmm. If you want to support somebody in the struggles, you need to first understand what exactly those are mm-hmm. and meet those people where they're at and then help them find resources that might be helpful for mm-hmm. them, right? Like, that to me is the role of a church community when yeah. there's crisis, right? And, you know, absolutely, you know, sex offenders that would like to come to church, you know, it's important that we know about that, right? And so that we can have appropriate policies in place. Mm-hmm. We're also not cutting those people off from community, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The alcoholic that wants to come to church, we're not cutting them off from community. We're just not letting them drive our teenagers.
Right, yeah.
You know, like, that's, it's, those are appropriate kind of bumpers to put around mm-hmm. behavior that might actually physically harm other people in your congregation, yeah. right? But trying to police behavior that doesn't fall within your kind of understanding of what is Christian enough
yeah.
is not the role of the church.
Yeah. Now, let's take the Corinthians example, right? Mm-hmm. If I had a situation which someone I knew in the congregation was having an inappropriate relationship with their, we'll say, stepmother, I probably would say to them, like, this is really inappropriate. Like, and I think this is doing more damage than you are aware of that it's doing to you and to others. And I'm probably not going to let you be in leadership in this context, right? Well, mm-hmm. like, if this continues, you probably can't be in leadership. You probably can't be a mentor for our youth, right? There are probably things that you're not going to be allowed to do as long as this relationship continues. That said, I'm probably not going to say you can't come to church here anymore, right?
Yeah.
And that's probably a line that Paul would have been more willing to cross than I was, based on what I remember of the Corinthians passage.
Oh. Expel the immoral brother from your midst.
Yeah, so
yeah, Paul has seems some like spicy he's already takes sometimes. Like,
well, but he's also dealing with, like, trying to establish a brand new community where, like, we can't afford anybody to think that this is what we're about. Because mm-hmm. if word outside of the Christian community gets that this is what we permit, then the whole message is corrupted, right? But they're right. in a very different context in that sense. My biggest struggle with what we're talking about as church discipline within this article is that churches that tend to lean into this tend to be congregations that are very patriarchal and that they're led almost exclusively, if not exclusively, by men. And almost always the offenders are women.
Oh, preach.
And I can't say that exclusively, but in the stories that I hear, articles that I encounter that talk about this, the women are the one who are being told they're not faithful. They're not, if there's a divorce, it's because they weren't doing appropriate behaviors in the relationship, whatever that might be, right? It gets all sorts of messy, and it usually involves really unhealthy senses of male-dominated culture, in my mm-hmm. sense. So I'm really hesitant to, like, say, like, oh, yeah, the church should absolutely be disciplining poor behavior. But the church does have a role to say, like, there are things that are okay and there are things that are not. I don't remember if I've shared this on the podcast before or not, so you can stop me if I have. But I had a professor in seminary who shared the only time he ever excommunicated a member of his congregation was when it was a member who was openly a part of the Klan in their community. And, like, oof, everybody in the congregation yeah. knew that this guy was, like, a leader in their community chapter of the Klan. And so he followed, or my professor, the pastor, followed the outline in the Constitution, which is the Jesus' thing. He went to him on one-on-one, went to him with a council member, went to him before the council, and then got the bishop of the synod involved and said, this is where I'm at. Like, this is what yeah. we've said. And the bishop's like, yeah, you've done everything right. Like, you can say that he's not allowed to be a part of your community. And so he went to him and said, until you repent of this and stop participating in the Klan, you cannot receive communion here. Like, yeah. you can still come and be a part, but you cannot receive communion. And he 30 years after that, 40 years after that, when he's telling us the story, he was still broken up about it. Like, he felt like, I think this was the right thing, but I hate the idea of denying someone communion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really, really hard place to be that we should not take lightly.
Yeah. You know, I think there's exceptions to everything,
sure.
right?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
This lady was probably not a Klan member when she got
probably not
excommunicated from her church, you know,
or at least it was not a factor.
Not a factor. Yeah. Sandy Springs.
Unclear.
Yeah. We should write Mr. Roach for more information.
No.
Did not seem to be a factor one way or the other.
Yeah.
Right. So. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's hard, right? Like, ideas of discipline when there is a clear victim, mm-hmm. I think make more sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, if this was a situation where, all right, there's a married couple in your church, one person cheats on the other with another, you know, another person, and then that new couple wants to become part of the church
sure.
while the spouse is also part of the church.
Yeah.
There's a clear victim right there. Mm-hmm. Like, right, we see clearly like somebody who's been kind of like rejected and ejected, and that would be incredibly difficult for the cheated on spouse to be a member of a community that has this happening, right? Like, that would be really, really hard. And so is there a level of discipline there? Maybe. I'm not quite sure. I could say the answer is no, because I could see a victim.
Yeah.
When there's not a clear victim, it becomes much more challenging and much more difficult, I think, to kind of navigate. So some data, though.
Data.
55 pastors here that they have polled have not disciplined a member.
Okay, but how many have?
40% have disciplined a member.
So
5% are unsure.
They don't know. Don't remember.
I'm not sure how you're unsure about that.
Maybe you're unsure, like, what is
this
discipline?
Does this count as discipline? Yeah. Like, I got mad at this person and told them to, like, stop doing stuff. Is that it?
Wow.
I mean, I would put myself in. So it was 55% or 55 of the pastors?
55%.
Okay, all right.
I have not disciplined a member.
All right, so I would put myself in the 55%.
No, go you.
I don't know that that's a good thing. I'm just saying that.
See how long this trend continues.
Yeah, again, I don't know if there's, it like, potentially every member of the 40% could say, this is what I did, and this is the disciplinary action we took. And we might say, like,
yep, go.
I think you made the right decision, as painful and difficult as it was. And every member of the 55%, we would say, like, I think you missed something that you should have addressed, right? Like, and because there were victims being made within your community and congregation, and you buried your head in the sand.
Yeah.
Or that person was a wealthy donor, and you didn't want to make them angry when they were yelling at somebody in a staff meeting or in a congregational meeting. Like, and they should have been told no. Like, for me, this is just more data for data's sake.
Yeah.
I don't think it kind of reveals anything here. But it does kind of definitely raises the question, what is appropriate church discipline?
Mm-hmm.
So if you had somebody who yelled at another member in a congregational meeting, what is an appropriate church discipline? Like, what power do you think the church has in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, if the behavior is carried out in the view of the congregation, right? I think it's actually easier to address in some ways. Like, it's definitely uncomfortable and not fun, but it's easier if everybody watched this thing happen.
Sure.
Because then, you have the witness of the group, but you also have the ability to say, like, to stop it in the moment. Ideally, right? The first discipline is to stop it in the moment and say, we are not going to continue this conversation because this is inappropriate.
Yeah.
And just to name it right there. And then to be able to have the individual conversation with this person one-on-one. And depending on what their response is to that, like, I mean, maybe it's heated passion to the moment. Like, yep, you're absolutely right. I was out of line. And there's an opportunity for an apology and move on. But maybe if they're like, I didn't do anything wrong, then maybe it's like, then, you know, as a council or as a congregation, you're not allowed to speak at the next meeting. Like, there, I mean, I think there are reasonable. I think there are reasonable ways to say, like, we cannot allow this behavior to continue. Right.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say exactly what the discipline would be, because in some ways it's like disciplining your children. Right. Like, every situation is going to be slightly different, and there are going to be rewards and or consequences based on the individual, based on the situation that you're in, based on all of those factors. So it's hard to say what's right. But I can't imagine a situation where someone yells at someone in a congregation meeting. I'm like, all right, you're out of the church. You're done.
Right.
Like, it would take a lot before we got to that point. And maybe it gets to that point, but it would take other things besides just yelling in a congregation meeting.
Like, enforcement of, like, fair behavior within the grounds of the church is a very different conversation from excommunicating somebody because their marriage with their spouse fell apart. You know, like, those are two very different things that we're talking about. And I think, you know, one, I think, is maybe a vital part of the church, right? Mm-hmm. And the other one is, like, I think there's maybe rare exceptions where it's okay.
Yeah.
But otherwise, we don't have much business doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is complicated from an ELCA Lutheran perspective, because we acknowledge, like, the who is in charge of kind of the congregation is the congregation, that they have the most power at the seat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a lot of people in a congregation, so collectively, you know, an individual within that doesn't have that much power,
right?
But collectively, they have the most power.
Yes.
And so if you're, like, starting a church and you're, like, the founder and you're, like, writing bylaws, you're writing everything, and you're kind of leading the church that you started, then that person has the most power.
Yep.
And that person has clear, like, these are our guidelines. And if you're a part of our community, you follow these guidelines. Mm-hmm. But when you come into a church, it's not the same,
yeah,
right?
Like, true.
There's not quite the same of like, these are our guidelines, you know, and you can't necessarily come in like, hey, week one, these are my guidelines.
Yeah.
Get on board, congregation. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, there are pastors who do that. And
I bet not well.
Varying levels of success. But right. You know, one of the things that we do here at Lord of Life that I think helps is that we do start every meeting with our mission and vision to remind ourselves of what we're going to. And we have our values pretty front and center. I mean, not we don't necessarily recite them at every meeting, but we talk about our values often enough that we can point to them and say, like, this is out of line with our values. Like, the way we are speaking to one another right now is out of line with our values. And ideally, in a congregational meeting, the congregation president is leading that meeting and they're addressing that when it comes up.
Yeah.
I'm obviously there to support that role in whatever way I can. But honestly, what's harder than just like, oh, I'm yelling at this person is microaggressions, right? And like policing the things that we say that we don't realize are actually really hurtful to other people in the room.
Sure.
That's the one that's even harder because sometimes I miss them and sometimes we don't realize, you know, what we're saying that we don't intend to be harmful is actually harmful for others.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that makes it so much challenging.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I was youth director. We've had to discipline youth.
Sure.
That happens. Again, no paddling. I want to make that clear.
You've never had to send a kid home from a trip from Lord of Life, right?
I don't think so.
Oh, you would be part of that 5% that doesn't know.
Well, I'm trying to think through. Kids. I'm just trying to think through, has there been a situation on any event that I have asked a parent to come pick up their child?
Yeah.
And I don't recall any. Like off the top of my head.
Now, we came close once.
On a mission trip where we are off-site, I've never done that. Yeah. Has it been on a lock-in or a retreat? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe. I can't recall doing that. Yeah. I have, when I worked at summer camp, fired a counselor.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
That's an employee relationship. That's right. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So I've had to do that.
Yeah.
And that was not very fun.
Yeah.
So
I do not have the authority to fire a member of Lord of Life.
Yeah.
That's lame.
I have to go through a lot of processes to excommunicate
someone. Like you should, honestly.
You fired.
Right. So. What do you get to do then?
It's unclear.
Yeah. So I guess it's tough. Like, what would it take for us as a church to say, like, you can't take communion here? Do we have guidelines for that? Or is it just kind of like...
Yeah, we don't have like a specific guideline of like, this is the bar that you're going to cross, right? I think that things in my own list that would definitely be cause for concern would be unrepentant sexual... I don't know, I even know what the word that is. Because it wouldn't be necessarily like assault, but like... If you've
harm?
So if you... Like, for instance, if I knew that someone was convicted of pedophilia and did not show any remorse for it whatsoever and wanted to come and be like, I'd have a lot of questions and a lot of concerns about that if you're not willing to acknowledge that this thing is wrong. Like, I don't know what that would look like, but that would be something that we talk about. I think that if you, repeatedly caused problems that disrupted the mission and vision of the congregation, I think that would be something that we might get to a point where we say, I don't think this is the right context. I don't think this is the right place for you, and I think you need to look for another place to be worshiping because it doesn't seem that you're in line with our values. I think that would be something that we might, not to say like everybody has to be 100% on board, but if you're going to actively work against what we're doing, that we as a congregation have said this is what we're about, and you're over here actively working against it, like we're probably going to come to a point where we're going to say, I don't think this is the right spot for you. Now, it's a lot easier to just say like, this is going to prevent you from serving on council, or this is going to prevent you from being in leadership than it is
a member, yeah.
Yeah, saying, like, we're going to say, like, you're not allowed to have communion here. Like, it would take a lot for me to say that you're not going to be allowed to. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember this. It was it President Biden during one of the elections where there are, like, Catholic bishops who, because of his stance on abortion, were saying that they were going to refuse to serve him communion and things like that. And, like, there are a lot of Lutheran pastors at the time who were like, you know, communion should never be weaponized as a punishment, which I totally get and respect. And like, on its surface, I agree. Like, we shouldn't be weaponizing communion. Yeah. And in some ways, it's like, you know, taking away your kid's dinner, right? Like, you don't want to weaponize meal time with your kid, right? But then I think back to the pastor that I think went through all the right steps with the Klan member back in the '60s. I'm like, I don't know. Like, maybe there's a time. And I don't think that was the time. I don't think this bishop doing that to presidential candidate Biden was appropriate. But I don't know. There might be a time. There might be a place.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's not this thing that the article talked about. It's not that.
Yeah, like, yeah. That seems very easy to me. To be like, what?
Yeah, like, that's a no.
Bunch of Muppets.
Muppets?
Muppets.
No, I'm pro-Muppet.
I mean, I like Muppets.
Oh, yeah. More Muppets.
Yeah, I think my takeaway is, like, when it comes to a community kind of disciplining one of its own, like, it needs to be incredibly thoughtful in its processes.
Yeah.
And it should be somewhat rare. Like, it should be like
not three a year for 15 years.
Again, if you're a congregation of 20,000 people, maybe that's a big deal. Yeah, that's MBD. Yeah. 3 years, not that bad. But it should definitely be a tool you do not want to use.
Yeah.
And
it shouldn't be like, oh, I got this in my back pocket. I can work this out anytime I need to. Yeah.
And the congregation definitely needs to be like, this is something we do not want to ever have to do, but we need a plan in place for when you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a tough.
Yeah.
I mean, that people are messy, and
yes,
we serve, even the clean looking people are messy. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, it's hard to kind of navigate those things together.
Agreed.
Okay. Church
Did
discipline.
You say agreed twice because the first one was high pitched?
No, it's just agreeing twice.
Okay.
Was it high pitched?
It was high pitched. And sorry. Then you went agreed.
Unintentional. It's like puberty's hard, all right?
Shut up, guys. Like a freight train.
It's hard when your body changes and your voice cracks.
At 30, what?
Almost 40. Shut up.
I got nothing else, by the way.
Oh, we're done?
Well, clearly we're done.
So. Clearly we're making fun of Pastor David.
No, I'm saying, I mean, if y'all have something else, y'all can say whatever you want.
I think he wants to say all right again.
I want to discipline Patrick for saying Reese's Pieces incorrectly.
Yeah, I know.
All right, I do have news. Air Force One, that is not the same character as, like, Claire Preston.
Oh.
Is it written, like, is it the same author who, like, wrote the original book or anything?
No, I don't know.
He just conflated them, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, Sandy Springs is a suburb of Atlanta, so could have 20,000 members. I don't know.
Yeah.
How did you know that?
I looked it up.
Oh, okay. Wow, he's just been sitting.
I have
on
the
this
power of it. No, I looked up like, I have the power of the internet in my hand. All right, well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, send us an email, beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. Let us know if you've ever disciplined someone in your church.
Actually, no.
I'm curious. What do you got? You can find all our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
Or if you've been disciplined by your church.
Yes, I want to hear that story.
If you're the recipient of discipline.
Yeah.
Because we want to be able to be upset with you.
Yeah.
Upset with you.
Oh, like, on their behalf?
If you got disciplined by your church.
But what if they were rightly disciplined?
Yeah, that would be the tough one. Like, they're starting the story and you're like, oh, you go girl or whomever, or whatever. Right, you go dude. And then at the end of the story, you're like, I think you're wrong.
Yeah. Like, what's that Reddit thread? Am I the wrong one? Yeah. They use another word, but yeah. Am I the wrong one?
So cute. Am I the wrong one? That's so wholesome.
Just wrap it up.
Let us know if you're the wrong one.
Agreed.
Thanks for listening, buddy. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.